real challenges. So you tell everybody to wash their hands, wear masks. How do you do that in places where there is no supply of running water?
Welcome to The Evaluator, a podcast by the Independent Evaluation Unit, IEU, of the Green Climate Fund, GCF, the world's largest multilateral climate fund. The IEU aims to conduct evaluations that will help make the GCF faster, smarter, and better. We are committed to collecting and producing high-quality evidence to inform policymaking within the GCF and broader international climate finance arena, leading to better outcomes on the climate action front. The Evaluator brings you compelling insights on cutting-edge topics related to evaluation, climate action, and development, featuring experts from across the globe, as well as from within the IEU. Today's episode is hosted by me, Eben Yod from the IEU. Today, a talk with Dr. Uni Karunakara, who is currently a Shinhan Distinguished Visiting Professor at Yonsei University and a visiting faculty at Tsinghua University, as well as an Assistant Clinical Professor of Public Health at Yale School of Public Health. He worked as the International President of Doctors Without Borders from 2010 to 2013. The Independent Evaluation Unit at GCF was very excited to host him for a discussion on COVID-19. COVID-19 continues to be a major part of everyday life for people in most countries around the world. Despite its ubiquity, countries have taken very different approaches in dealing with it. According to Dr. Karunakara, the tools available to countries can be split up into two basic categories.
Now, if you look at response strategies, there are basically two strategies. One is suppression and the other is mitigation. So suppression, basically, you want to really hit hard, come down, keep the cases low, and then keep maintaining the situation at that level so it doesn't get out of hand. It doesn't mean there are no cases, but it is that you keep it at a very low level so that the health system is able to detect very early and then do what is necessary. Mitigation is basically slowing down the spread because it's just perhaps the health system is overwhelmed, they don't have the capacity. So what they want to do is try to sort of reduce cases to a level that the system can actually handle it. So it sort of looks at healthcare capacity that's available, and then they look at how many cases they can handle, etc. And then, of course, they're trying to protect the at-risk patients.
There's been plenty of discussion on how the pandemic has been dealt with in economically advanced countries. However, Dr. Karunakara's main concern isn't those countries.
Then, of course, the areas that I'm concerned about, because a lot of the work that I've done in my career have been in really resource-poor settings. So if you look at that's where the next, where it's all going to play out next in continent of Africa and some other really poor parts of the world. So in Africa, for example, almost every country has now reported cases. Now, there are real challenges. So you tell everybody to wash their hands, wear masks. How do you do that in places where there is no supply of running water, as you can see in refugee camps? Physical distancing in refugee camps in an urban slum situation is absolutely very difficult to do. And then, of course, measures like lockdown just increases the risk of poverty, hunger, violence, etc. So there are real social sort of considerations and social consequences to any measures that you would put in place. But what is very clear is that suppression measures that were put in place, like in Korea, are unlikely. First of all, countries don't have the capacity to or the resources to put that in place in most countries around the world. So it's likely to succeed. So the best you can look at our mitigation measures, right? But to what extent can they even do that? Now, some of the challenges health systems let's say, the continent of Africa are not the best. But one thing that we have realized, it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, your systems can fail. So USA, in the United States, the system has failed miserably. They're a well-resourced system, but it has failed, right? And a lot of the health systems in Europe has failed. So failure, you're seeing failure in the rich countries, and you will see failure also in poor countries, right? Human resources, the numbers of people that are available to respond to a crisis is way fewer than you would see in rich countries. So even being able to sort of rush in and support them, like humanitarians are likely to do in the past, is also difficult, because a lot of these countries are now saying, we don't want foreigners coming in, right?
The word usual probably isn't the most appropriate when we talk about COVID-19, but it's clear that our usual approaches to handling crises in poor countries are facing unprecedented challenges. Is there any strategic guidance we can take away from what's happened so far? Here's Dr. Karunakara again.
Now, programmatically, I think that one of the most important things that we can do is protection of health workers, because if we can't cater to the entire population, what we want to do at the very least is to keep health workers safe, because that is the way you preserve health capacity to be able to, because if health workers keep dying, then you're further depleting the system. So you want to keep them, you want to protect them, you want them to have all of the protection materials they need so they can continue to treat people. So this, for me, is an absolute important priority in a continent like Africa. The other thing that I want you to think about is a little bit about the strategy that we are used to employing in outbreaks. So for example, Ebola, is that you have a population and you have a subset of that population that has been infected, right? So what you do is the subset of the population is then isolated, and then our efforts are to prevent the chain of transmission. You want to stop the infection from getting from the infected to the general population, right? So you break the chain of transmission, you bring the outbreak under control. But in COVID, the situation is very different. You can assume that almost the entire population is already exposed to COVID, right? So if you want to bring down mortality, what you want to do is you want to protect the high risk. So here, what is happening is the other way around. You're shielding a small group of population from getting infected, right? You get the difference, right? So one, you are preventing the population from getting infected, and the second, you're sort of preventing the high-risk people from getting infected. Now, even this strategy, how we go about implementing it in poor countries will test the ability, all of their systems, and their ability to sort of enforce some sort of discipline in how they're able to do it. Because the downside or the danger is you collect all the high-risk people in one place, and then if for some reason the infection gets in, then it can be disastrous, like it did in Italy, because it hit the old-age homes, and then it just sort of decimated the elderly. So you have to be very careful. One possible solution is what we are seeing in state of Kerala in India, is that the government gave everything families need to protect their own high risk, their elderly, their chronically ill, etc. And that has actually worked very well. So you're putting the onus of protection on families. So you give them everything, you deliver food at home, you give them masks, you give them everything they need, but then they are responsible for protecting their high-risk family members.
South Korea has been highlighted as a model for other countries to follow. Is there any kind of knowledge sharing going on from Korea to African countries whose numbers are still going up?
Korea is now being seen as a lot of African countries are now asking Korea, okay, tell us what you've learned. Tell us how we can implement it. So I've been part of some of these discussions, facilitating conversations between Korea and African countries so that you can take the knowledge that we've gained here to other parts of the world.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Evaluator by the Independent Evaluation Unit of the Green Climate Fund. We'll be back with more insights that matter for the evaluation and climate action communities. So stay tuned.